Hello, listeners. This is Lee Price.
This is Will Ford from Football 365.
And you're listening, smartly, to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, although I would describe it as the Chelsea FC podcast.
It's in a pocket of space. Anderson came and didn't get there. Chance for Chelsea. Goal for Chelsea. Kai Havertz in the Champions League final. And Chelsea take the lead in Porto.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, your number one source for all things Chelsea. This episode, we are heading to Wembley after beating Spurs 1-0 in our second leg, a 3-0 win on aggregate. We're going to be breaking that game down, as well as looking at the latest news regarding Emerson and Antonio Rudiger. It's a big one this week, and it's coming up next.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of At the Bridge Pod. Is this the longest January on record? Is it payday yet? Well, I should not have spent all my wage on biscuits and podcast merch, which I am wearing right now, the podcast merch, that is. How were your weeks, though, guys?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, thank you. And as I mentioned just before the podcast started, it's a special day tomorrow. It is my birthday, 28 years young. Am I still classed as a youngster?
I'm that age.
I'm going to go with yes. Chris, you're the oldest, so I'm presuming you're going to say yes as well.
Yeah, but in football terms, you get into that thing now where you're meant to be at your peak birth and people are stopping. You're not getting any four-year deals anymore.
No, but Chris, I'm returning to Sunday League football on Sunday. That's, you know, peak powers. I'm back. You've got to be excited for that, though, surely.
Absolutely buzzing. I can't wait to leave you on the bench again.
Oh, well, that's...
I'm only kidding.
It's all right, because when people go, oh, how old are you? And you go, oh, 28. They go, so you've got a wife, a kid's job, your own house, your own mortgage. I'm like, no, leave me alone.
Life as you get older doesn't really become any better. It just becomes more and more stressful.
You're two years off becoming a wizard.
To be honest, my advice to anyone, don't grow up.
That's the best approach, I must admit.
Don't grow up, because being an adult, it's stressful. Just, if you can, for as long as possible, milk being a kid.
You're right, yeah. Peter Berth Pan. You're spot on. On to another round of Who Is That Former Blue? This former blue, he joined us for £1 million back in the 1990s. He's played in La Liga, the Bundesliga, and of course the Premier League. He won the League Cup with three separate teams. And he also has a Premier League Manager of the Month award, dated in October of 2007. Do you have any ideas yet?
No. I have no clue.
Wouldn't even know where to start.
That's a good start. There's some listeners who know that straight away. I know straight away, but I have the answer in front of me, so that's cheating. with that, we're going to head straight to the newsroom, though, and see what the latest is at Stamford Bridge. Another week of Chelsea news, so let's go and find out what's been happening in our weekly roundup in the elevator of Chelsea news. Chelsea will wait to do any major business until the summer window, with Declan Rice, Aurelien Tchouameni, Wesley Fofana and Jules Koundé on their shortlist. Chelsea have drawn Plymouth in the FA Cup fourth round. Leon boss Peter Bosch has confirmed they will not terminate the loan of Emerson. Billy Gilmore is going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks with an ankle injury, and he's returned to Chelsea for further assessment. Chelsea have recalled Kennedy from his loan at Flamengo. Antonio Rudiger wants to stay at Chelsea. Chelsea are already planning with Armando Broja as part of their future projects. And to round up, just when you thought the contract drama was over, it is now reported Antonio Rudiger will likely sign a new deal with Chelsea, as he wishes to stay. Azpilicueta will leave, as he wants a two-year deal plus an extra extension on that. And Andreas Christensen wants a fresh challenge, so is expected to leave. If last week we were left feeling hungry after the Servant of News, this week we're feeling bloated, tired and a little bit guilty of the feast we've just had. I guess we've got to talk about this Emerson and what was rumoured at the time. I mean, it's changed today with Peter Bosch, but this compensation fee package deal for recording, it's we can all take a moment to laugh at my hot take on it, but totally justified. I deserve it. But let's talk about why many feel this is an amazing deal, if they do agree to it. What was I missing?
I don't really know, if I'm honest. I mean,
I thought it was going to go a brain.
I mean, I think Emerson is a good backup left wing back. I know you said about him not being great in the Prem. I've never thought Emerson was terrible in the Prem. I never thought he was this world beater in the Prem. Don't get me wrong, but I think he can do a job. I think he was. It looks like Kennedy's now going to be our left wing backup, or so it seems. But I think Emerson is a much better option now. If I'm Leon, I wouldn't want to let him go either. That's fair enough. I think it's a bit of a joke that they want us to pay like, what is it, £5 million to get him back. I think that's a bit of a joke, and that's taking the piss a bit, really. But I think Emerson. You look at Man City's left back options and Liverpool's. I think Emerson is just as good as Zinchenko. I think Zinchenko is a bit more versatile, but I don't think he's any worse than him or any better. Liverpool have got Milner as their backup left back sometimes. He's 36 and he's a tremendous player, but he's 36, you know. And they've got that Tsimikas, who's very good going forward, but debatable at the back. I think it would have been a good move getting Emerson back. Having thought about it more and more, I wouldn't have wanted to pay £25 million for him, because I think that for a 29-year-old, I think is very steep, who could potentially be our third choice left wing back from the summer when she was fit again. So, but we haven't got Emerson. It's one of them. We've got Kennedy back, which I'm not too happy about, really, because I think he's very wasteful. But look, we've got Alonso. We can play Nadoy there. Reece James can play there when he comes back if needed to. Aspilicueta can play there. So it's one of them. We're going to have to deal with it. Alonso's mum and Pepper are playing well. It'll be a big miss, Chilwell, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, for the record, Kennedy seems to be on social media now, the next Ronaldinho left back. I mean, everyone's seen, I'm seeing all those compilation videos. I'm like, okay. To be fair, though,
he was solid
for Granada last season on loan. I did see some of the games because of the Europa League. And to be fair, he was decent. I've got to give credit to the guy. Well, he was decent.
If he was that decent, would he not be at a more, would he not be a more prominent team now? Would he not still be at Granada at least? Would he not be in one of the big leagues in Europe?
It's a very fair point. It really is. I don't know whether it's because of what happened previously with him. Obviously, there's a bit.
Yes.
We all know what went down when he was on a pre-season tour. Yeah. Chris, did I miss something with this Emerson recall? What am I missing?
I think, to be honest, I think it was just when we must have found out how much Digne was going to cost. And I agree with you, Berth. I don't see that as a good deal for someone of his age who is only coming in as a backup at some point. He probably would have come in and been first choice now, but as soon as Chilwell's back, he would have been a backup again. And then, you know, we would have had a situation in the summer where we're trying to offload Emerson and Alonso because we've got four left backs, and that just wouldn't have made any sense. I just think as well, it was someone who is an international, he's experienced, he can come in and do a job. I agree with you, Berth. I think he's no worse than other backup left backs in the Premier League, and he already knew Tuchel's style, he already knew what Tuchel wants from his players. It would have been someone just to come in and slot in straight away. So I understand why we wanted him back. I don't agree with paying that much to get your own player back. That seems like a bit of a joke, to be honest. I can understand some form of compensation, but 5 million, I mean, you could. There's clubs out there who buy players permanently who aren't theirs for 5 million. So I think that was a bit of a joke from Leon. The Kennedy situation, though, I honestly think he's been bought back for worst case scenario. I'll be shocked if Alonso, Hudson-Odoi, Pulisic all stay fit between now and the end of the season. I'll be shocked if we see Kennedy play. I think he's in there in case we have two of them get test positive for COVID and then we're left with no one, or one test positive for COVID and the other one's injured. And again, just for peace of mind, I think for Tuchel, I think that's why he's been brought back. And there was rumours that he wasn't getting that much game time over in Brazil anyway, so I don't think it's going to harm him that much. And I think he's at an age now where I don't think we have to worry about harming his career. I think his career now is what it is. So I think he has literally just been brought back for worst case scenario. I'd just be shocked if we see him regularly.
The Serginho death seems to be that could be a deadline day move. I wouldn't be surprised. It really starts to give off them vibes. Yes. I mean, look, I stand by my tweet, and if listeners haven't seen it, I put that the Emerson thing with the compensation, it's like loaning your lawnmower to a neighbour for a whole week, only to then want it back 4 days later because you want to mow your lawn. And they say, yeah, sure, £20, please. It's what it feels like. It feels so stupid that we... But then again, we didn't put a recall clause in his contract. We put a option to buy in. That was our decision. Will this change going forward? I think that it will change how we do business deals with loans. I think that each will have a recall option, but then will clubs want compensation for these being triggered? That could be a thing. Another one is you have to keep good relationships with these clubs. If we'd have kept hammering on and hammering on with Leon, that could tarnish a reputation between, well, a relationship between us if we want to ever do a transfer one way or the other in the future. That came into my thinking a bit as well, because yeah, it just is in football, especially if you, it's a bit like Gallagher. If we were able to take back a player from loan, can you imagine that sort of repercussion? They would probably be very hesitant in taking one of our players on again in the future.
Yeah.
So it's one of them. Contract news is there. I'm going to say it. The Rudiger thing is a surprising positive. I mean, I wonder if the reason his mood has changed a bit is because Real Madrid dropped their interest.
Maybe.
I mean, PSG, no disrespect. You know what you're getting when you move to there. It's probably going to be league titles, domination in the competitions over in France, but Champions League, it's possible, but unlikely. Whilst with Real Madrid, you know what you get with Real Madrid, and also it's Real Madrid.
But the thing is, though, with Rudiger, he actually looks like he really wants to stay, and that he loves the club and loves the fans. It's not as if he wants to stay. The club just aren't giving him meeting his demands. I think that's what it boils down to. I don't think it's necessarily him wanting to go. He's made his mind up. If the club say, yeah, we'll pay this, he'll happily stay. I'm sure he will. I don't think it's necessarily anyone dropping interest or whatever. I think he just loves the club. He wants to stay. The fans want him to stay. He just wants the club to give him what he wants. That's all it is. I think that's all it genuinely boils down to.
If it's £200,000 a week, that's a rumoured figure. We don't know, of course. But I'd say that's fair. When I was hearing 400, that's when I was thinking, that's ridiculous.
But yeah, 200. I totally agree with that. I think you put a tweet out the other day, Marky, of who would you rather, Christensen or Rudiger, to stay? Rudiger every day of the week.
It is now. Yeah, I agree. That's how I side with this debate.
I think, though, as well, I think the sticking point might have been the fact that he's asking for a 4-year contract. And we have that policy with only offering 1-year deals to people over 30. He's going to be that less than 2 years into that 4-year deal. And I think when you're looking at £200,000 a week, I don't think that's a ridiculous amount of money for a player who's so important to us to be asking for. But would you still want to be paying him £200,000 a week at 32? Maybe not.
It's the worry, will he do a Willian drop-off?
Yeah, and I think that's probably what the club are looking at. I think there'll be some sort of negotiation there where that deal will probably come down to 3 years with the option for another year.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's Azpilicueta. Simon Phillips tweeted it today. He wants 2 years plus the option of another. Well, I stated today, actually, that I feel this is the perfect season for him to depart, because the fact that, you know, he's going to be an icon, maybe even a legend status at our club. But he's now starting to... He's been more performance drop-offs, I've noticed. But still, it's almost like the perfect... You do not want to have an Ivanovic situation where you stayed a season too long. And we're all... It's recency bias. You all remember what they did really recent versus what they did over a career. A big example, Wayne Rooney. What an icon for Man United. But everyone remembers how his career tailed off a bit.
Yeah.
That's always brought up. So, and Christensen, if it's true, wants a new challenge and he's looking at Dortmund and the others. Okay. All right. But will you thrive over there like you have under Tuchel? Don't know. And to be fair, if it's between Rudiger and Christensen, I know who I want. And that's not Christensen. Sorry. So,
yeah.
Chelsea, though, we took a trip to Three Point Lane to take on Spurs in the second leg of the Manchester City Cup. Result, though, it's Chelsea heading to Wembley yet again. But, guys, how mad is it that without VAR, this could have gone to penalties?
I don't know what was worse, the fact that they had 3 goals chalked up or the actual officiating. Because the Kepa foul on Lucas Moura, which the ref gave, was a terrible on-field decision from the ref. Like, that is genuinely one of the worst decisions I've seen that he gave that.
Even you could tell that that was outside the box.
But not even that one. That was the one that Rudiger did. I meant the Kepa one. You know, when he got the ball clearly in the second half.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah, so that I thought that one was worse than the Rudiger one. But the Rudiger one, like you said, that was terrible. That was a terrible decision because it was clearly outside of the box. And to be honest, I don't think Rudiger actually even tackled him or even made any contact. So it just highlights how bad the officiating is in this country, I think. I mean, the offside on Harry Kane, that rule, I've always found that rule a bit strange, to be honest. Did Kepa mean to step up in time? It looks like he did. But I'm still not convinced that he actually meant
you're
to
step not up convinced.
I'm not convinced.
To be fair, I think it's just. Oh, I don't know. I think it's good tactical awareness and calm. Because
don't get me wrong. If it is, it's genius by Kepa, but I just feel that he just sort of hoped more than anything. But yeah, I mean, was we lucky? I don't think so. I thought that the better team won on the night. And I thought Tottenham were very, very, very poor. It'd have been disappointing if they got us the penalties, to be honest.
What are you thinking, Chris? Were we lucky?
No, because all three of the decisions by VAR was right. I think you're only lucky if there's contention about it, and there wasn't. The Rudiger one is clearly outside the box, if it's a foul at all. The Kepa one is one of the worst. I agree with you, Beth. Like, one of the worst on-field decisions I think I've seen. Everyone could see he clearly got the ball. Even Lucas didn't ask for a penalty. And he's the one who's supposedly been fouled. So how the referee got to that conclusion, I don't know. I think the Harry Kane offside, I think, is lucky. I think that one is lucky. I think Kepa's put his hand up, and I know people have put it up that he's put his hand up because he knows he's going to be offside and he knows the rule. I think he's putting his hand up in hope that he's offside. Yeah. Because it was Kepa's original mistake. It was a terrible pass into midfield that he tried that got intercepted. So it was his mistake, and I think he tried to make up for it. Got caught in no man's land and then just put his arm up in hope rather than expectation, but it was offside. So I thought Tottenham was awful, and I actually thought Tottenham ruined the game by being so bad, because Tottenham was so bad we didn't have to do anything. And then I was just disappointed in the fact that we didn't do anything. We almost, once Rudiger scored, you might as well turn the game off, because Tottenham went, oh, we're out, and we went, oh, we're through. So we'll just knock the ball around now for the next 70 minutes doing nothing. And the game just, if it wasn't for such bad refereeing, it would have been one of the dullest games ever. Because if you take all of those decisions out, which caused a little bit of a stir in the crowd and a little bit of emotion in people, take them decisions away, literally nothing happened in the game after that. After Rudiger's goal, nothing else happened. I just thought it was a really, really dull game. But we got to the final, so. And that's what cup games are about, so I don't really care.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, it weren't the most exciting game. One game it was exciting for, Malang Sarr had arguably probably his best game in blue. He just needed to improve his crossing. Weren't the best, to be honest. But he had a decent game. There was one chance where when he had a shot, I did think, oh, we could have a Rudiger-type goal here. It didn't happen. Now, look, we've spoken of Kepa. I'm going to do a bit of a love letter here, because this is passionate. You know, he's played out of his skin these past few appearances. And when you think of who he was to now who he is, he's truly come a long way. And I'm completely confident in having him in goal whilst Mendy is on international duty. You know, watching him play, it's just, I think it's the change in confidence. You know, his actions are more commanding. You know, even if it may put him in a bit of a bother, he still commits. There's no shying away anymore, no ducking, no hiding. And, you know, whether it be palming the ball away or coming out to pressure the man who's coming in on goal, I'm loving this version of Kepa that I'm seeing. I mean, do I have any rivals for my passion for him between you two?
Look, he's done fantastically well this season. I've got to give him credit. I know you all gave him some stick. And to be honest, some of it was probably justified. Some of it was probably a bit harsh on him. But I think this season he looks confident. Like I said a couple of weeks ago, maybe, he looks like he's bulked up. He's a lot more physical now, which is a good thing. And I think the players around him now have confidence in him, which when he played under Lampard, I don't think the players had any confidence in Kepa.
He'd have scrambled on that Kane shot.
And now Kepa sees that people are having confidence in him, and that means he's growing as a player again, and he's performing well. He made a couple of really good saves that maybe a couple of years ago he wouldn't have saved. He looks really comfortable with his feet. I know the passing to Jorginho for Harry Kane's offside goal was was poor. But other than that, I thought it was a flawless performance from him. And you know what? It's really good to see. And look, for £72 million, you expect it. But I think considering where he was a couple of years ago, he's done really, really, really well. And you're so pleased for him because the stick that he got was brutal at times. And to ride that out and to take it on the chin, a lot of players wouldn't have done that. And, you know, fair play to him. He deserves a lot of respect and a lot of credit for that because a lot of players just would have walked or would have just sort of shied away from it, but he hasn't. And yeah, well done to get there.
Yeah, I mean, during the Lampard era, I'm convinced he'd have scrambled, like I said, on that Kane shot. But
definitely, yeah.
He's so much different. What are you thinking, Chris?
I think he deserves a lot of credit as well for not being moody and sort of throwing his toys out of his pram about the fact that he is one of the most expensive goalkeepers in the league, and then we have made him number two. When we signed Mendy, we made him number two, and he hasn't shied away from that and thought, well, you know, got in a mood about it. He's upped his game, I think, and I think he's trying to get that number one spot back off Mendy, and it's almost made him better. I think it's took the pressure off, like I said before, being a number two and not having the spotlight on him so much. I think some of the main things that's changed him, I think confidence is a massive one. Like I said before, like, it's been a long time now since he's made a real bad error. So that gives you confidence. And I think everyone plays better when they're confident. I do think he's bulked up and has got more used to the Premier League now. There was a moment against Tottenham. There was two moments, actually, which I think show the change between the Lampard Kepa and this one. The save after Emerson header, he moved his feet really well, which was my criticism of him before, that he's not the tallest keeper. And when you're not the tallest, you have to have really good footwork. And under Lampard, he didn't. He was always rooted to the spot and trying to reach for things that he was never going to get. But on that header, he moved his feet really well across the goal and made what could have been a more difficult save, a more comfortable one. And then they had a corner and he punched it away in amongst a crowd of players. And I don't think I've ever seen him do that before. He's under Lampard, especially when teams crowded him on set pieces, he'd just stand on his line and hope to make a save. He'd never try and command that box. But he seems to have been coached better, I guess, into commanding that area now and feels more confident to do it. But I think the massive credit to him goes in terms of his attitude. He hasn't asked for a move away when he become number two. He's just got his head down. He's worked hard. What concerns me is I could guarantee if he makes a mistake against Man City tomorrow, everyone will turn on him again. That's my only problem. Everyone's loving him at the minute. You see it all over Twitter. Everyone congratulating him while he's playing. But you know those same people will turn if he makes a mistake, which I think is unfair because some of the criticism he got before was really unfair. Yes, he was at fault for a lot of goals under Lampard. But sometimes he was getting the blame for goals that he could do nothing about and people were still blaming him. So he has had some real unfair criticism. And I just hope if and when an error does happen, the fan base don't turn on him again because it's an easy target.
Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, for a fact, I'm not going to do that because he's not the same player he was and mistakes happen. I found it was on Sky Sports. They brought up the stat sheet career by manager. Now, obviously, it's a smaller sample size under Tuchel, but under Sarri, 54 played. He had a save percentage of 68, clean sheet percentage of 43, and his performance versus XG was negative 2.4. Under Lampard, it tanked. I mean, 47 games, okay, seven less, 59% save percentage, 23% clean sheet percentage. And this is where it tanked. Performance versus the XG was minus 11.1. I mean, that is horrific. Under Tuchel, 15 games, 83% save, 62% clean sheet, and plus 9.1 for the performance XG. I mean, that for me is, that shows it all, you know.
That's the biggest change there, though. I know it's a smaller sample size, like you said, but under Lampard, you can see there that he conceded 11 goals more than he should have.
Yeah.
Whereas under Tuchel, he hasn't conceded 9 goals that he should have. And I think even when he's playing now, he's not making mistakes anymore. You know, in those 15 games, if he played 15 games under Lampard, he wouldn't have made a save probably. So he has definitely improved all the technical aspects of his game as well.
Yeah, 100%. Premier League preview time. For some bloody reason, after the last lunch date we had with City, we've chosen to ask them back out again and head to their home for what could be a sequel to Come Down With Me. We don't want. Confidence, though. We're going to ooze that confidence. Why it's a lunchtime kickoff again, I really don't know. I don't get these, but yeah. Press conference. Chalobah, Chilwell, James and Christensen are all out against City. Christensen, obviously, the latest to pick up a positive COVID test, unfortunately. Everybody else is raring to go. There was some talk, though, regarding Kennedy, who's been obviously recalled from his loan, and he's going to be part of the team going forward. Tuchel did the sort of standard manager talk when asked, obviously, about transfers in and out for January. You know, when we have something to announce, we will. I mean, we hear that from nearly everyone nowadays. You know, personally, I'll just react with a smile and a wink each time I was asked that. But, guys, do you think this game's a title race decider, or is the title staying firmly in Manchester?
It's staying firmly in Manchester. I think they're by far the best team in the league. I think it's up for debate whether Liverpool and Chelsea are second. I don't know which one's number two in the country at the moment, but I think Man City are clear. They are clear of Liverpool and Chelsea. And you could argue they're probably the most informed team in the world at the moment.
They'll have 13-point lead over us if they win.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if we win. You never know. We've been good against City in the past. Tuchel has been very good against City. Tuchel's admitted in his press conference that he got the tactics wrong against Stamford Bridge earlier on the season. So you'd like to think we'd play with a different approach, play a lot quicker, be aggressive. It was far too passive last time we played and far too slow in possession. We didn't really press them either. They're going to play a high line. Timo Werner, I think, should play. I think Lukaku should play. I don't believe this hype that Havertz deserves to play ahead of Lukaku. I don't think that should happen. It's going to be a tough game because Man City are just fantastic. But they can be beaten. Crystal Palace have beat them at home this season. whether I think we're going to beat them or not, I don't know. But I'll play it safe and go with a 1-1.
I mean, to be fair, I was quite surprised to see that Raheem Sterling is top scorer for them. Equal with Bernardo Silva, but I just thought...
No, it doesn't surprise me because Sterling, I actually think he's very, very underrated. I think Sterling's one of those people that, I've said it before, he's not really a creative winger, but he's their best. I think he's Man City's best finisher, and I think he has his knack of just arriving in the box at the perfect time. You look at all the problems that Chelsea have going forward. We don't have that player that arrives late in the box or arrives in that right place at the right time. We don't have a Raheem Sterling. If we had a Raheem Sterling, I think the gap between us and Man City would be a lot closer.
I hope there's no bias there because he does turn 28 this year. I'm just saying.
Oh, man.
You know, just
no
saying.
I think the only thing me and Raheem Sterling having common to be honest that we're both 28 soon.
Chris, what do you think? Do you think that we have a chance in this game?
Yeah, I think we've got a chance in the game. I don't think we've got a chance in the title race. I think even if we go and win there, they've still got a 7-point lead. And they are the best team in the country, but only because they're the most consistent. I watch some of their performances and they don't blow me away every game, but they are the most consistent. They don't tend to drop stupid points. And I think that's where us and Liverpool have got to improve if we're to catch City longer term. Both of us are guilty of, you know, home draws against Burnley and Brighton and going and losing away at places like Watford or, you know, play other teams down towards the bottom. Man City don't do those things. If you put a relatively poor team in front of them, they'll beat them. And I think that's why they'll go on and win the league, because I don't think they've got enough tough games left to drop that many points. Even if we win, I think the game's almost a free swing for us, to be honest. I think everyone's bigged it up like this title decider, but it's not, because they're 10 points clear of us. Really, we've got nothing to lose going into the game. They're the ones who really almost can't afford to lose the game, because then it puts a little bit of pressure on them. People will start asking questions of whether the title race is back on. Whereas for us, I think 10 points behind now, our chances of winning the league are slim. If we go there and win, our chances of winning the league are still slim. If we go there and lose, then I think the title race is probably dead and buried then, but it pretty much is now anyway. So I don't think it's that big a title decider as they're all, as it's being built. I think I liked the fact that Tuchel said about how he got the tactics wrong at Stamford Bridge earlier in the season, because I think he was absolutely right, and fair play to him for admitting that, because not many managers do that, especially publicly. that he got it wrong. We was too passive in that game. And Man City, one of them teams where if you let them play, they'll beat you. Because they, no matter how well you defend, they'll find a way through eventually. I think going forward, I just think we have to go and take the game to them. I want to see us test their defence, because their defence isn't as good as their clean sheet record would suggest. They keep a lot of clean sheets because teams don't attack Man City. It's the same with Guardiola's Barcelona. They kept so many clean sheets because they didn't have to defend. They had so much of the ball and teams sat so deep that their defenders and goalkeeper had nothing to do. I'd like to see us take the game to them. I don't know whether he'll go back to the five at the back or whether he'll stick with this 4-4-2 or 4-2-2-2, wherever you want to sell it. I would like to see him stick to the 4-2-2-2, 4-4-2, especially now with the Christensen injury as well, because looking at the back three, really you're looking at Azpilicueta would have to go back into right-sided centre-back. Thiago Silva will probably come into the middle, and then Rudiger will play on the left. I've seen some people say that Malang Sarr can go back there, but he can't play on the right because he likes to play on the left. Rudiger prefers to play on the left. Thiago Silva can only play in the middle. The balance of that back three wouldn't be right without Chalobah or Christensen to play that right-handed side. And then if Azpilicueta is going back in there, then you're looking at Hudson-Odoi or Pulisic as your wing-back. And against Man City, they have good movement in wide areas. Do I want someone who isn't a defender out there? Not really. Not in an ideal world. And I just think we would cause them more problems if we just have more players going the other way. Mount, Pulisic, Hudson-Odoi, Werner, Lukaku, Havertz, whoever you want to pick. Ziyech. I think Ziyech could be a good shout for this game, because I think we'll have... You would imagine Man City will dominate the ball. It may not work out that way, but I imagine they would, because most games at home they do. We'll have a lot of turnovers of possession, and Ziyech is someone who can find a killer pass and miss out midfield. We don't have a lot of other attackers, especially, who can do that. You look at Hudson-Odoi and Pulisic, Havertz, they're all people who they need to play through the thirds to get up the pitch, whereas I think Ziyech, as he showed with that pass to Werner the other day, can miss out players and get us in behind straight away. So I think Ziyech would be the one person who I would like to see start.
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel on the Havertz versus Lukaku debate for this game?
God. Do you know what? I'm glad you brought this up, because I've been
This
is why I'm the host. I do my best.
Honestly, I've been having arguments on Twitter for like 2 days over.
Oh, don't do that. Don't be one of them.
I am fed up of people telling me that Havertz scored in the Champions League final. I know he did.
He did. Definitely did.
What's that got to do with this? That was
the Champions League final.
It was nearly a year ago. Man City are a different team. Everyone's in different form. Havertz isn't in as good a form as he was back then. Back end of last season, he really hit form. He's been hit and miss the past few weeks. My argument is, if we end up getting penned in against Man City, I want Lukaku there as an out ball, because he can go in behind, which still allows us to play channel balls and get into chase it, but he can also hold the ball up, buy free kicks, buy cheap fouls, allow us to get up the pitch if we do end up getting penned in. I know people are talking about the pressing, but you're not going to go and press Man City for 90 minutes. It's not going to happen, because if they're on their game, Man City can beat any press in the world. So you're not going to do that for the entire game. And Lukaku gives you, he's more versatile in terms of coming to feet and going in behind than Havertz. That's my argument for him.
I suppose the thing
Chris, can I say something?
Yeah,
he did score in the Champions League final.
Yeah, he did. So that means everyone who played in that Champions League final should start this game, because apparently that's how you pick your team.
He won a European trophy last season, while certain other players didn't.
Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah, I did watch that Seville game, and I'm still shocked that they won. But should I be? But
also, like, if you think about it, if the game goes a certain way and we only get limited chances, who would you prefer a chance to fall to, Lukaku or Havertz?
It's Lukaku, yeah.
Exactly. And that's what big games are decided on. They're decided in moments. And Havertz, his finishing especially, has been poor for a long time. So I know for a fact, if you might give me the option of a chance falling to someone, the one person in our team I'd pick would be Lukaku.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair comparison and debate there. If listeners disagree, they can always get in contact with Chris and tell him. Though we're going to, before we sign off, we're going to look at that. Who is that former blue? So at the start, I said, He joined us for £1 million back in the 90s. He played in La Liga, the Bundesliga, and of course the Premier League. He's won the League Cup with three separate teams. And finally, he has a Premier League Manager of the Month award, dated October 2007. You guys clearly didn't pick up any ideas from them. So how about this? He's played with Damien Duff. He's played with Richard Dunn and Matt Letizia.
Okay.
Now I'll start a new thing here. Each week, you guys get to ask a question about this former Blue if you're stuck. So go ahead. What's your question?
Who is he?
Apart from that.
What nationality is he?
Oh, you've got it. Welsh.
What year did we buy him again? Sorry.
In the 90s.
I think I might know. Maybe know who it is. Can I ask another question, though?
Go for it.
Was he a striker?
Yeah, I'd say he was.
I don't know who it is.
I'd love if you remember where he played with Richard Dunn. I didn't know this.
I don't know that.
They were on the pitch at the same time. Everton. I didn't even know he played for Everton.
No. I didn't know. I think it is.
Go for it. Who do you think?
Mark Hughes.
It is indeed. It is the man who managed Stoke for 200 games exactly. He played with Richard Dunn at Everton. Damien Duff was at Blackburn, and that's how he won the League Cup. And obviously, he won it with Chelsea, and he also won it with Manchester United. So yeah, some surprising threads there that kept his career going. So yeah. With that though, we've come to the end of another episode of At the Bridge Pod. And always, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram if you do not already follow us. You can find us by searching for at the Bridge Pod. Leave us a 5-star review if you'd be so kind. And till Monday, that's us signing off.